RadioInfluence.com.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everyone. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here keeping us on track. Hey, we're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, questions, comments, smart remarks, we love it. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Our newsletter, blogs, podcasts, and all the hookups are there. You can also get to us via the email, info@CrushPerformance.com. And if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea, so do get to us. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Crush. And if you're on the Facebook, go to Crush Performance. We are there for sure, just spreading the good word. And that's what the show is all about. Today, listen, a really big show. I've really been looking forward to tackling this issue for actually a few years now. And I think the time is right. The stage is set and the time is right. When it comes to injuries and recovery in sport, should you ice? To ice or not to ice? That is the question. It's a raging debate, has been for quite some time, and today I want to get to the definitive answer. Does icing do more harm than good when it comes to injuries and recovery? We'll lay it all out as we talk with Gary Reinl, the author of the book Iced, The Illusionary Treatment Option. There is a second edition now out, but on the cover of his first book, the first edition of Iced, he has some pretty powerful wordage. Icing is wrong. Learn the fascinating story, scientific breakdown, alternatives, and how to lead others out of the ice age. His catchphrase is, "The meltdown is on." A great conversation coming up as we clear the air on icing in sport. If you grew up like I did, you used ice when you had an injury, when you were sore, when you were trying to recover. There's no question about it. The doctors, the therapists, the athletic therapists, the trainers were all recommending ice. They still teach it today. I personally think it's becoming a dangerous practice, especially knowing what we now know. But the Rice principle, rest, ice, compression, and elevation. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And well, elevation, maybe if it helps you become a little more comfortable. But icing, it turns out, is wrong on every level. Find out why as we talk with Gary later in the show. And of course, we all know injuries are part of sport. They're going to happen, but we want to decrease the risk of injury as much as possible. And when they do occur, we want to recover as quickly as possible. It just makes sense. In our programs, injury and injury prevention is the number one priority in the big picture. We evaluate every new athlete, organization, and team based on past injury history, potential for injury, and their training history to make sure we're minimizing future risk. Then we look at optimizing performance. Third priority is probably longevity in their career. But all of these are just the result of a really, really good daily approach to performance and injury prevention. That's how it works. Inside of our programs, if you listen to the show before, you know what our four top priorities are. And they are unmovable. They are like the rock of Gibraltar, solid in our philosophy. And they are rest, recovery, recuperation. And inside of that is sleep. That's the number one factor we look at when we build our program. Every performance program we build revolves around these factors. Then, of course, nutrition and hydration come into play. Third, we look at posture and range of motion to make sure the athlete is functioning properly. And then we train movement. Once those four factors are taken care of, we attack. Technical, tactical, strength, speed, agility, movement, power, whatever the sport requires and whatever the athlete needs to focus on, we attack. And then when those injuries do occur, we frame them up as an opportunity for two very good reasons. Number one, we sit back, we evaluate, and we look at what we can accomplish while the athlete can't compete or play or train as they normally would. One of the side benefits of getting injured during the competitive season is you can work on things that you normally wouldn't work on at that time of the year. You can really take an athlete while they're rehabbing and work on areas of development that will help them come back to be a better competitor, a better player, and a better athlete than they were before the injury. That's the goal and objective. And that not only helps the physical and performance side and potential future ceiling of performance, it also, from a psychological standpoint, is very, very powerful. The positive outlook and feeling of empowerment can actually help an athlete heal faster. So there's many, many sides to that story. But make sure, if you do have an injury in our programs, our rule is you get 90 seconds to feel sorry for yourself. And you do. You really do. It's upsetting. It's depressing. It causes anxiety. Just like we talked about in last week's show, it's a real thing. But if we can quickly turn that switch around and start looking at the positive side and how we can attack and get better, oh boy, it's a game changer for many, many athletes. So when you do incur an injury, minor or major, sit back, evaluate, regroup, and then plan an attack while you're rehabbing. It's a powerful, powerful approach. Well, we know what's going to happen as springtime approaches. Up in the north, northern states in Canada, we know what's going on with the weather there. Unfortunately, spring is coming, everybody. But as the baseball season gets underway, we know what's going to be happening in every sports medicine clinic across the land. There is about to be a massive influx of sore elbows and sore shoulders from every level of player in every genre of the game, from the weekend slow pitch warriors to the high-end college guys to everybody who's stepping onto the baseball field. And most of these injuries are preventable if you just prepare properly. What we're going to do is, on our Facebook page, Crush Performance, we are going to post a sample throwing program, a program we use for our pitchers to get them ready for the season. Now, it's not built for you, but it will give you an idea of how much time and patience we put into preparing our players for this season. So you can go to our Facebook page, Crush Performance, and check that out and just compare it to what you've been doing to get ready. Take your time and get ready for the throwing season. Throwing a baseball is one of the most dangerous movements in all of sport. There's no doubt. So make sure you're ready for it. And on top of all that, the shoulder joint is one of the most complex joints in the human body. It's also one of the most difficult to rehabilitate and return to play. So to help us unravel all the mysteries of the shoulder joint, we're joined now by Daniel Bless, physiotherapist at the Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Institute, with a special interest in the shoulder joint. Daniel, maybe start us off by telling us how you sort of focused in on the shoulder as an area of interest.
Well, it all started when I started at the Glenn Sather Clinic about 4.5 years ago. From there, we've kind of branched into some kind of, mostly, like, we have a knee team, we have a shoulder team. I joined the shoulder team, where we've kind of had the privilege of being able to work with the shoulder surgeons, a lot of the shoulder surgeons in the city, helping to assess various shoulders for whether they're surgical or not. And from there, it's kind of snowballed into me treating a lot of shoulders from young to old and taking a special interest in them.
Well, very timely we get you on, and that's one of the reasons we hunted you down, so to speak, because, listen, the snow is melting, and baseball, especially Little League baseball, even recreational baseball in terms of the slow pitch and adult leagues, it's all starting now. And we know at this time of the year, and I've seen it firsthand, that you know, there will be an influx. You're about to get really, really busy, and it has a lot to do with, I think, a lack of preparation, a lack of knowledge of people who are going to be out there involved in the throwing sports, for sure. So why don't we start with this? You know, why don't we talk about how incredible the shoulder joint is, for number one, and how vulnerable it is, and especially in a throwing sport like baseball. And it is quite a unique joint, to say the least.
Definitely. Like, the paradox of the shoulder is it needs to have a ton of motion to do everything we need it to do to throw. But it also needs to be stable enough to prevent injury. And I find often that is where things start to break down, is the stability lacks. And that's where injury, pain, inflammation comes in. Then, as you notice, just overuse, rotator cuff, stresses to the joint capsule, the labrum, and then just ultimately things start to break down in people.
Yeah. Well, we know, looking at baseball in particular, especially the pitchers who throw more than anybody. Well, I shouldn't say that. The catchers actually throw more than anybody. So we take very, very good care of our catchers, for sure. But baseball is a very, very unique sport. And throwing a baseball, of course, is a unique stress on the body. And the range of motion and the action that happens around the shoulder joint in the throwing motion is absolutely incredible. If we look at the rate of internal rotation and the stresses that are there, and it's a pretty unstable joint. So there's a lot that has to happen in order to keep it healthy. Danielle, in your experiences, you know, as we get set for the season, what are some of the things you would like to see people doing before they get out and start throwing the baseball full tilt?
Definitely, just in general, looking at general mobility of, it's not just about the shoulder, I find, as a lot of times the issue comes from lower down. So hip flexibility, low back, upper back, tightness. We've become quite a sitting society, so a lot of people get a lot of tightness in their upper back and shoulders. And when you have that extra kind of kyphosis at the upper spine, that results in extra stress going through the shoulder. So sometimes even just addressing the core, the back, the posture, and then kind of trickle down into the shoulder blade and into the shoulder as well, I find. And also just looking at the volume. I know some of the weekend warriors, right, you haven't thrown a ball in 6 months and then you just go. And that's where also things start to break down as well.
Yeah, gradual increase in volume and intensity. We're talking with Daniel Bless, physiotherapy at the Glen Sather Sports Medicine Clinic, who has a special interest in treating and rehabbing shoulders. So, again, very timely to have you on, Danielle. I like what you said about the kinetic chain and the lower part of the body. I mean, look, when we train our athletes, we train from the ground up. We create stability and mobility around the joints. Up to whatever it might be. It could be a baseball, it could be a bat, it could be a tennis racket, it could be a football, but whatever the implement is, we know that shoulder function is influenced by other parts of the body. And when we talk about this to coaches and athletes, they're amazed when we start talking about how hip stability and even core and hip mobility impact the function around the shoulder. It's a kinetic chain and it truly is all connected, isn't it?
Definitely. And I mean, we're talking about shoulders today, but not even shoulders. I see so many injured, especially adolescents, into my clinic with knee injuries, ankle injuries, hip injuries, back injuries, and especially shoulder injuries that all come from that stem of hip abductor weakness, decreased hip stability, decreased core for sure.
Yeah. And I know when an athlete gets injured, and here's the interesting thing. Sometimes those injuries are blessings in disguise because they get to experts like you and the athlete will for the first time go through a real proper rehabilitation program. And typically our athletes come back throwing better than they did before. And that's part of the process and preparing properly.
Mm-hmm. And definitely, especially and now looking into the prevention, I don't think there is enough of that out there. Of, you know, someone isn't having pain currently, but there definitely can be some mechanical breakdowns that are happening. So if you can get at those in the preseason or before the season starts, really in the off season is the time to be working on all the other things that contribute. That can definitely decrease the chances of shoulder injury, general injury, right?
Yeah, so important. And I mean, the everyday warm-up and every practice from the little duffers right up to the recreational weekend warriors, the practices can be such a valuable time to take 10 to 15 minutes to do some constructive, preventative work. And that's so important. Hey, Danielle, let me ask you this. So we've had a lot of experiences, of course, in our end in the baseball world, but it's never easy for a parent or a coach to identify and deal with injuries. First off, identifying them early enough, and then helping the athletes understand how to work through, you know, just a minor pain or working through actually being hurt. There's a fine line there, and either way, you have to proceed with caution. Don't you agree?
Definitely, especially in the young population.
Yeah. So what are some of the guidelines? If you were to send out some thoughts to our parents and coaches and even athletes that are here today, what are some of your thoughts in terms of just how to deal with that pain? And when it does get serious enough, when should they reach out?
Definitely. So, you know, it is a tough thing of kind of distinguishing the hurt versus harm conversation on what's just a little bit of pain that's not too much of an issue and what is starting to do harm. So I find, you know, the short-term pain, you get a little pain, it goes away right away. By the next day, you're not really noticing anything. You know, you can get right back to sport. Those don't worry me as much. The ones that I find really linger. So you just had a good workout or throwing and you're aching that whole day. You're aching even into the nighttime, can be a sign of some inflammation. And then, you know, it lingers quite some time, like more than 24 hours and starts compiling. That's where you need to start thinking about resting from that action, just because, especially with shoulders, I find once they get flared up, they take a really long time to settle down. So they don't necessarily bounce back as quick as some, I find. So if you keep pushing it, to the point where it's really inflamed and really sore, you're going to be out a lot longer than if you started resting it a little bit sooner.
Oh, the shoulder joint. It's such a complex thing. I mean, if you really think about it, the anatomy and the musculature and the range of motion and what that joint can actually do, it's absolutely incredible. And to put it under the stresses of throwing on a regular basis, it has to be done right. And not just from a mechanical standpoint, as you know, you and I talked about earlier, but in terms of the increases in volume and intensity, which is really important. In the baseball world, of course, we've all been introduced and exposed to the pitch count formulas, which are a good start. And it's just a start, but it's a good start. It's a sort of a warning shot across the bow. We really have to watch how many pitches our athletes are throwing, but it also has to do with our outfielders and position players in terms of intensity as well. So the volume and intensity factors really do play a major role here. So Daniel, so an athlete has an injury, they want to get in and maybe potentially get some help or some guidance. How can they reach out to experts such as yourself down at the Glen Sather Sports Medicine Clinic?
Well, all of our physiotherapists are accessible through direct access. So you just call and make an appointment. We all can treat any condition. Obviously, at our clinic, certain physios have started developing special interests in certain body parts, but in general, everyone should be qualified. So really, you just call, make an appointment for an assessment, and then get assessed, and then that's where the treatment plan starts.
Great, Danielle. Appreciate your time today. Good advice, sound advice as everybody heads out to the field this year.
Great. Thank you for having me.
All right. There you go, everybody. Prepare yourselves for the baseball season. Reduce risk of injury. And when you go through that process, you're probably going to be a better baseball player. So it just makes sense. Coming up after the break, when you are aching and sore, or when you are injured, should you ice? The research says no. We get to the definitive answer as we talk with the author of Ice, the Illusionary Treatment Option, Gary Reinl, right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Crochelle, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Today, we are asking the big question when it comes to injuries and recovery. To ice or not to ice? The question's been asked for decades with twisted, convoluted, and gray areas in terms of the answers and what is right and what is wrong. We've been skirting the perimeters of this question for quite some time because I wanted to get to the root of the problem and a definitive answer, or at least as close as we could come. And today, I think we're set to do exactly that. We're joined now by the author of Iced, the Illusionary Treatment Option, Gary Reinl. Gary, thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So to sort of set the tone for our audience, because today we are going to talk about some myths, some misconceptions, and we're going to try to right an incredible wrong here. Your book, which has been, it's been fantastic read and read by many, is called Ice, the Illusionary Treatment Option. And on the cover, it's really interesting. It's flat out straightforward. Icing is wrong. Learn the fascinating story, scientific breakdown, alternatives, and how to lead others out of the ice age. I really like it, Gary. Hey, how did you come to this sort of an angle in your writing and in your focus for your work?
Well, that's a great question. I appreciate it. Here's what happened. I work with over 100 professional athletic teams and then elite athletes across the U.S. and Canada. And very often people would say to me regarding the technique that I recommend, which is a muscle stimulating device called Mark Pro, but it's a muscle activation device. And they would say to me, well, should I ice before using your product? Should I ice after using your product, while using your product? When should I ice? How much should I ice? And how long should I ice? And the questions kept coming about ice. So about 10 years ago, I figured I had to get a real answer, because the only answer I was giving at the time was, don't ice while you're using my muscle activation device because it'll slow things down. I'm trying to move things along. So that's not a very good answer. So I started reading, and I read thousands of articles on the topic. And believe it or not, there are actually thousands. Many of the articles that I read are really just rehashes of the other articles, because that's kind of the way the medical literature does things. I read a dozen clinical textbooks and Wikipedia. Now, I mention that because Wikipedia actually was the most current and accurate information. Where people think, well, Wikipedia is just that. No, hold on. In this topic, they were the most current. Textbooks that are used in school are often 8-10 years old.
Right.
And the most current information was in Wikipedia. So I read all the articles and the textbooks on the topic of muscle regeneration and preservation. So these are the things that matter in athletics, preserving tissue and regenerating tissue. So if you get hurt, how do you stop more from getting wasted, and how do you get back what was damaged? And then I went out and interviewed literally hundreds, and I say literally because people often think I'm not serious about that, hundreds of trainers, athletic trainers, physical therapists, doctors connected to the major sports teams. So that would be the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball, and then some in soccer. I regrettably didn't get to everybody in soccer, but I tried. But in the other leagues, I got to virtually everybody. And I simply asked them a question. Do you ice? Oh, you do? Why do you do that? And they would answer me. And I said, well, does it work? And then they would have a response. And I said, do you have any information about, you know, why you think it's a good idea, or why you think it does what you just said? Any literature, anything you think I should read so I could better understand? And then at that point, a lot of people would say to me, well, why are you asking all these questions? I mean, this is what everyone does. Well, what's the question here? And I said, well, here's what I found. I found that some people ice only the first day. Some people ice throughout the entire rehab process. Some people ice for prevention. Some people ice only if there's damage. Some people use crushed ice. Some people use cold air. Some people use cold water with compression. Some people only use compression with ice. Some, because, like, for example, an ice bag wrapped real tightly with an ace bandage. They have all these different protocols and all this stuff. And I said, well, there's just got to be a best way. There's just got to be. It can't be this scattered. There must be a best way to use ice. So I set out to become, in my view, my goal was to become the number one person in the world on how to use ice most productively. Okay, well, I get all done reading everything, talking to everybody, going through all the process, and I realize, uh-oh, there isn't a best way. It actually delays healing. It increases swelling. It causes additional damage. And it shuts off the signals that alert your harmful movement, and you need movement to solve the problem, and you need the signals to prevent you from doing movement that hurts you. So now I have a major problem. I now know that you shouldn't do it, and virtually all of my customers are doing it. And then I started to tell people what I knew. And here we are today. The writing of the book was really the result of, I did an interview with a guy by the name of Kelly Start from the CrossFit world. And he has a book called The Supple Leopard. And when Kelly interviewed me, we had some 250,000 hits on the interview. And the next thing I know, I'm getting calls from, and I say all over the world, it's virtually mostly in North America. But I had calls coming from Australia and Japan and people calling and saying, what are you saying here? What do you mean ice is wrong? I said, well, here are the facts, and let's, you know, talk about all you want, but here are the facts. And the calls got to be where I was spending about 10 hours a week, minimum, every week, 10 hours on the phone talking to people, answering the same questions. So at a certain point, you realize that's not going to play very well. I'm going to have to do something. So I wrote it all down in a book.
Excellent stuff. And the book is called Ice, the Illusionary Treatment Option. Well, Gary, I really love this. We're talking with Gary Rhino, author, teacher, and really, really a challenger of conventional wisdom, if we could call it that, for sure. And that's exactly what this is, because we all grew up talking about ice. So a very interesting path for you, getting to the point where you're looking to figure out the most effective ways to use ice to help athletes recover, recuperate, and regenerate. And in your findings, you find that ice does the contrary, the exact opposite. It is the anti-healing agent, and yet so many people are still using it, Gary. So let's talk about maybe some of the facts, really maybe sort of in a general terms for our audience here to try to explain what you found and what you learned when you discovered that ice is just not the right approach when it comes to helping athletes recover, especially, Gary, when we look at, let's talk about the professional world, the amount of money being spent on injured players. Listen, it is priority number one at the top level, at every level, don't get me wrong. Injury prevention, recovery, recuperation, and preventative, approaches across the board. So this is a very important conversation today.
Well, I agree with you. And actually, interestingly, I had a cover story in McLean's magazine several years ago. You can look it up. You can just put my name, put ice in, it'll pop right up on McLean's. And then also a cover story in the Toronto Star on the same topic. So this interest in the topic is not just this afternoon. This has been going on for years now since my book has come out. And I've gotten very good coverage. And people always ask the same question of when they haven't questioned this before, they asked me the same question. Well, why do people ice? Well, they ice for three big reasons. One, to prevent inflammation. Two, to prevent swelling. Three, to get rid of swelling. Now, those three things are completely unaffected positively. Now, they're affected negatively, but they're unaffected positively by ice. So let's just pick inflammation first. We'll go there first. Inflammation is bad, right? You don't want inflammation. But in fact, if you read anything on the topic, you Google it yourself with healing, and you'll see there are three steps to healing: inflammation, repair, and remodel. And it's actually required. You can't really get to step two and three without the first step. So there could be inflammation without healing, but there can't be healing without inflammation. So actually, you don't want to block inflammation. You actually need it to heal. It sets off the inflammatory response. Your immune system sets off the inflammatory response, and that's how your body actually heals. So you don't want to block inflammation. But here's the part about it. Putting ice on damaged tissue doesn't block inflammation. It doesn't do anything. It might delay it. But when the tissue rewarms, the inflammatory response resumes, and you didn't block anything. So it doesn't block inflammation. But the bigger question would be, do you want to block it? Well, the answer is no, you don't want to block it. But let's just say you did want to block it. You thought, oh, well, there's too much inflammation. Your immune system isn't regulating this correctly. And by the way, this is the same innate intelligence that puts eyelashes where they belong and fingernails where they belong. But for some reason, you think it doesn't know how to regulate tissue damage. I mean, come on, it doesn't do it wrong. But let's just say you were right and there was too much inflammation. How much too much? Is it 5% too much, 15% too much, 27% too much? Or right hand's different than left hand's, or your hand's different than my hand's? You see the problem? There's no way you could possibly know if there was too much inflammation. And worse, if there was, how would you regulate it so you got the proper amount?
Right.
So you can't measure if there's too much. You can't measure how much you need. We have to rely on the fact that your immune system knows how to manage this process. And it manages it very well, by the way. And otherwise, healthy people, it virtually doesn't go wrong. Now, there may be someone who says, well, what about? No, there aren't what abouts here, folks. Your immune system manages the problem. It does it very well. Think about the time you looked in the mirror and you saw a bruise in the back of your arm. And you thought to yourself, wow, I wonder when that happened. You know, now it's kind of like yellow and green. It's no longer a bright purple that you would see when you first did it. Now, just think about that. You didn't even know it was there. And your immune system has been managing that situation, repairing the tissue and evacuating the waste on its own without your help, and you didn't interfere. How did it do that? Well, it's because it knows how to do it. So the fact is, putting ice on damaged tissue doesn't in any way, shape, or form prevent inflammation. You shouldn't prevent inflammation. And fortunately, when the tissue rewarms, the inflammatory response resumes. So then let's look at swelling. You say, well, you don't want swelling. You got to prevent swelling. Well, first of all, putting ice on damaged tissue does not prevent swelling. It never did, never can, never will. And here's the point of that. There's been 40 years of widespread use of ice on damaged tissue. There's not a single article in the literature that even remotely suggests that it blocks swelling. It may delay swelling, but it doesn't block swelling. And here's the point. Your immune system sets up so that damaged vessels constrict And the healthy surrounding vessels dilate and increase perfusion. In other words, the fluid is deliberately sent to the area to mobilize, repair, and clean up crew and package the waste for evacuation. You wouldn't want to block it. You need it to come. It's supposed to be there. And you say, well, yeah, well, how about too much? Okay, same question. How much is too much? How are you measuring? Is it 5% too much, 40% too much? Hands different than feet, you different than me. You see the problem again? How in the world would you know how to regulate it? Well, the fact is, you can't regulate it with ice. And in fact, what happens is, when you put the ice on, you delay the process, but you certainly don't prevent it when the inflammatory response resumes or fluid comes to the site. Now, on top of that, because you put the cold on the tissue, it actually causes a backflow from the lymphatic vessels into the interstitial space. So it actually increases swelling in the area, not decreases it. It increases it. And then that waste that is brought back in from the lymphatic vessels is viewed in effect by the body as a splinter. So it sets off an inflammatory response and sends more fluid to the area. So that which you shouldn't have touched in the first place, that you interfered with, now you've interfered with it. You didn't stop it. You shouldn't have stopped it. But you not only didn't stop it, but you've actually made it worse. It's like, well, wait a minute. Well, but everybody does it. Well, everybody's doing it wrong. Now, the next thing they say, well, get rid of swelling, right? We'll get rid of swelling. Okay, let's just stop and think for a second. Stop being foolish. First of all, if it did, clearly there'd be some research proving that. There's not a single shred of evidence, and there never will be, unless someone fakes data, that it could get rid of swelling. And think about it like this. You have waste that accumulates at the end of the inflammatory cycle. That's called swelling. It's not called inflammation, by the way. Those two words are not interchangeable. Mm-hmm. The inflammatory response is what sets in process the recovery. However, the swelling is merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle you have not yet evacuated. Now, here goes the big question. How does it evacuate? Well, it evacuates via the lymphatic vessels. Well, how do they work? Well, they're passive, and they're nearly fully reliant upon muscle activation around the vessels to move the waste. Okay, so let's just ask a really tough, straight question. How could shutting off the signals between the muscles and the nerves, which is what icing does, how could that possibly move waste to a passive system? And of course it doesn't. So you say, well, wait a minute, the three big things, inflammation, getting rid of swelling and preventing swelling, it doesn't do any of them. Well, that's right, it doesn't. And it actually makes things worse, not better. So now you've got the problem. You say, oh, yeah, but what about for pain? I got to control pain. Well, okay, let's just give you the spot and say yes. If you put ice on damaged tissue, it will reduce the sensation of pain while it's cold. But when the tissue rewarms, the pain's going to still be there. And the reason you have the pain isn't gone. It's still there. Actually, it's now worse than better. So that's not going to work. And I liken the idea of putting ice on damaged tissue to the sympathetic bartender that gives the alcoholic a drink so he can temporarily feel better. Does he temporarily feel better? Yes. Did you solve the problem? Of course not. So no, you haven't fixed anything. So you've got this issue where you're saying, well, wait a minute, well, what about for pain? Well, hold on, just let's take something like a broken collarbone. So here you break your collarbone, and I give you ice so that you can rest, because you need your rest after all, right? You got to rest. So I put the ice on, now you fall asleep, and the whole time you're sleeping, you're distracting the fracture site. So that means you're pulling the fracture site apart while you're sleeping. Now, do you know anybody in medicine anywhere who would recommend that you fall asleep and because you can't feel it, separate the fracture site while you're sleeping? No one would recommend that. And yet that's the reason they give you the ice so that you can get your rest so you won't feel the pain. Actually, you need those signals. Those signals tell you the position you're in is harmful. So you want to feel it. What is clearly a better idea would be to decongest the area and find a neutral position. Well, you decongest the area by activating the muscles around the vessels that move the waste of the lymphatics. It's very simple. Something like the Mark Pro is a perfect product to do that. You put the pads on around the tissue, you pump out the waste, and the next thing you know, you have far less pain. If you've ever had a sprained ankle, or if any of your listeners have had a sprained ankle, you know that once the swelling's gone, your ankle moves better, doesn't hurt nearly as much. Well, get rid of the congestion, you get rid of most of your pain. Then find a neutral position, and you won't have pain. So it all becomes so dreadfully simple to manage the three bigs, that being the don't want to block inflammation, you actually need inflammation, you can't block swelling, and you can't get rid of swelling by putting ice on. And putting ice on for pain is, at best, a bad idea. I understand why you might think it's a good idea, but at best, it's a bad idea.
Oh, such great stuff. Gary, listen, we got to cut out for a quick break, take care of some business. But when we come back, everybody, the meltdown continues right here on Crush Performance. Stick around.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. The meltdown continues as we ask the question, to ice or not to ice when it comes to injury and recovery in sport. Today, we're getting to the answers as we talk with Gary Reinl, the author of ICE, The Illusionary Treatment Option. Gary, one of the things that really frustrates me is shutting an athlete down after an incident or an injury. I am a big proponent of active recovery, and I think you are as well. You recently wrote a great article. It's called Procrastination, the Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management. I get so frustrated when athletes are sitting on the sideline waiting for somebody to give them a green light, and I think it frustrates you as well, doesn't it?
You're right, and that's the article's name is Procrastination, the Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management, like you said. So that's it. That's the whole point. It's a fundamental flaw in injury management. Let's just take what really happens, okay? Athlete playing the game at night, 8:15 at night, 3 minutes left in the game. They roll their ankle. The trainers and the doctors run the court. They make sure no one's going to die. So they make sure they're breathing. There's no concussion. Bones aren't sticking out of the body. They're not going to have a bleed out. They just make sure. Okay, everything's good. They get them back to the bench. Some well-meaning assistant on the team brings over a bag of ice and someone else wraps it around tightly with plastic or with an ace bandage. And they say, look, you know, just sit here. The game will be over in 3 to 5 minutes. We'll go downstairs. We'll do a little valve. We'll get an x-ray if we need it, and we'll figure out what we're going to do. So now the game is over, and the players help down to the training room. The doc decides they should get an x-ray, so they take an x-ray. The doc comes out and says, hey, good news. It's a second or third degree sprain. You'll be good in a couple of weeks. You know, maybe 3 to 5 weeks, you'll be good. And, you know, let's just take it light right now. Let's give the body a chance to calm down and heal. Here's a prescription for some anti-inflammatories and pain med and a muscle relaxant. And take these, you know, for the next couple of days, and then use ice as needed through the night. And then once you're up and about tomorrow, come back to the training room. We'll take a look and figure out what we're going to do. Okay, that is 100% wrong. 100% wrong, right after you concluded that the person was not in any medical danger.
Right.
So they're running the court, you make sure they're okay, and then everything that if that was wrong. And you say, well, how could that be wrong? Well, that's what everyone does. Well, it's wrong. In fact, I was once asked, more than once actually, but I gave this one answer this the first time. Now I always give this. I was asked, well, what would make it worse? I said, beating the area with a ball peen hammer. That would be the only way you could make it worse, which you just did. Now, think about it. You took an anti-inflammatory, but you need inflammation to solve the problem. Why would you do that? Don't have a clue. You took a muscle relaxant, which you need the muscles to move the waist of the lymphatic system, so that's a bad idea. You gave them pain meds, so now they can't feel the signals that are alerting you to harmful movement. You need movement to solve the problem, and you need the signals to alert you to harmful movement. So the three things the doc gave you are all wrong. Oh, I know the docs are going to go, this guy's not a doctor. He doesn't know. I am a very organized reporter. And I can prove everything I just said. In fact, if you read the warning labels on the drugs, it says if you use these drugs, it will inhibit healing. So I have a paper called Anti-Inflammatory. My lead co-author is the editor-in-chief of the Addiction Sports Medicine Journal. You can Google it. It's free. It's called Anti-Inflammatory Reinl, R-E-I-N-L. Put in my name. It'll pop right up, and it's free. And you say, well, but that's what everyone does. Yeah, I know. And then what they do is they wrap it real tight with an ice bandage or with plastic with an ice bag tucked in there. And you say, well, that's going to control the inflammation. Well, first of all, you don't want to control the inflammation. You know, that's not the goal.
Right.
And it's not going to prevent swelling. It's not going to get rid of the swelling. It's just going to make things worse, actually. And you say, well, why does everyone do it that way? Because they procrastinate. Procrastination is a fundamental flaw in injury management. It's the way things are done. And a general way, it's the way things are done. It makes utterly, literally no sense. You know it's going to swell. You know it's going to become very painful. In fact, if you do the traditional path, by morning, blinking your eyes will make your foot hurt. It makes no sense what they do. Let's look at it just from a simple weather analogy, okay? If you knew it was going to snow 24 inches in the next 24 hours, if you knew that, 1 inch per hour, If every hour on the hour you would open your door with a good stiff broom, you could effortlessly keep your sidewalk clear of 1 inch of snow. It'd be simple. If, however, you wait till morning and open your door to 24 inches of angry snow, I assure you, you will not clear it effortlessly, and it will not be with a good stiff broom. If you know it's going to swell, why in the world you let that happen? Why don't you clear that 1 inch of snow all night long? I don't have a clue, because they procrastinate. That's the only, there's no reason other than the fact that's what everyone does.
Right.
Why wouldn't you begin activating those muscles immediately begin activating them? In athletic training, everybody knows to do ankle pumps. Everybody knows. If you say ankle pumps in a training room, everybody knows what that means. So you move your ankle back and forth, and you just try to move the fluid through your body. And it actually works because your muscles contract and relax. And there's a pump, basically, in the arch of your foot that compresses. It's sort of like standing on a tube of toothpaste. You stand on the end and the lid's off, and you push, the toothpaste flies forward. Well, that's where the blood returns out of your lower body, through a pump in the bottom of your foot. Now, with that said, you say, well, so what about the lymphatics? Would that move the waist? Well, of course it moves the waist. Now, does it move it very well? Well, all the muscles you're activating, it's going to milk that cow backwards at that spot. It's going to activate the muscles around the vessels or the muscles that you're using to do ankle pumps. But what would be way better would be to use something like the Mark Pro and put a pad in the bottom of your foot, behind your knee, in the middle of your quad, and up near your groin area, and activate the muscles in the entire leg and simply move that waist all night long. Not only would you never have an inch of snow, but if you did what I say, you would never have more than just some flurries coming down, and you'd be moving it right along.
Yeah.
It's just waste. See, people look at swelling, and they've given it some position in the marketplace. Like, oh, it's swollen. It's really badly swollen. Or, oh, you see how swollen this foot is. It just stop. Don't give it any credit.
Right.
It is merely the accumulation of waste. At the end of the inflammatory cycle, you have not yet evacuated. That's all it is. It's not a good or a bad thing. It's merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle that you have not yet evacuated. The only reasonable question is, how does it evacuate? Well, by your lymphatics. Well, how do they work? Well, they're a passive system, nearly fully reliant upon muscle activation around the vessels to move the waste. In effect, it milks the cow backwards. Well, how do I activate the muscles? We could do ankle pumps. You could use something like the Mark Pro. There's a few other ways that you could activate the muscles, but really they're the two simplest.
It's, yeah.
Do ankle pumps, and if that solves your problem, good for you. If it doesn't, then something like the Mark Pro will solve the problem. And like I said, I have over 100 professional athletic teams that I work with, and I can tell you that's the way they're all doing it. I have well over several hundred universities and colleges here in the States, a couple in Canada. I don't have many in Canada, but a couple in Canada who are using it for that purpose. And then I have in the minor leagues, in the pro teams, several hundred more. And so I know enough people who are doing it this way, and I get reports back every day. If you read the article, Procrastination, A Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management, you will see that we make a reference, or we say we have hundreds of case reports of cutting recovery time in half. When I'm telling you, it's way more than hundreds, and it's way faster than half.
Right.
Just think about it in a simple thing. If in the morning you didn't allow that 24 inches of angry snow to accumulate around your ankle, and when you came back to the training room, there was basically no swelling, practically no pain, and functional range was relatively decent, wouldn't you rather work on that athlete to solve their problem then do the opposite and try to deal with someone with 24 inches of angry snow around their ankle? And you know what they tell them? They say, okay, well, it's going to be a couple of days. The swelling gets out. We'll start to, we'll start this little rehab and do a little range of motion going. And it's like, stop, I don't do any of that. I never have that problem. But you see, it's worse than that, because that swelling literally suffocates and kills otherwise perfectly healthy cells in the area that were not involved in the initial trauma.
Right.
And as a result of all the congestion, you stop moving the joint because it hurts to move, or it won't move because it's so swollen. And the next thing you know, you get faulty scarring. So now you have what are called adhesions that they're going to have to break in therapy 6 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now. And then on top of that, you have disuse attributes from lack of use. And you say, wait a minute, you could avoid all that if you simply never allowed the snow to accumulate? Yes.
Yeah.
You don't have the suffocation because there's nothing there to suffocate. You don't have the faulty scarring. And you don't have the disuse atrophy because the muscle's activated. When you activate the muscle, the muscle produces and releases what's called PGC-alpha-1 that basically blocks the disuse atrophy. So you don't have the disuse atrophy if you use. And that's a pretty smart thing that you think your innate intelligence would be smart enough to say, hey, we don't want to lose this muscle if he actually needs it. Well, why would you want it to atrophy? They expect it to atrophy, not because it needs to atrophy. They expect it to atrophy because they know they're not going to use it. Well, why don't you just not let the waste accumulate, not have all that downstream problems? Remember, the downstream problems are suffocation and killing otherwise perfectly healthy cells that were not involved in initial trauma. That happens. You don't have the faulty scarring, so you don't have the adhesions you have to deal with down the street. And now you don't have the disuse atrophy, so you don't have to get it back. Why in the world would you procrastinate and make something take 6 weeks that you could easily manage in two?
Yeah.
Well,
it's a trifecta, Gary.
I have hundreds of trainers.
Yeah. It's a trifecta.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's a trifecta.
There you go.
Yeah. No, it's a trifecta, Gary. No question about it. A paradigm shift, so to speak. And that's why this conversation today is so, so important. If nothing else, we get people thinking about what they should be thinking about, Gary. And thanks to you, we're talking with Gary Reinl, author of the great book, ICE, The Illusionary Treatment Option, where he lays out fact. And he also lays out the fiction that's driven us to this whole culture of icing and cryo treatments inside of sport. Gary, just in a couple of minutes that we have left here, let's talk about the Mark Pro, because I saw it in Texas. I really like it. I know we have athletes that use it. And just to give people an idea of what a great option is, because I think everybody understands from what we talked about, the atrophy, the regeneration that's going to be required, the remodeling that's going to be required just from being sedentary and shutting it down after injury. I'm one of the biggest, you're singing to the choir here, Gary, for sure. I'm one of the biggest active recovery people out there. There's no doubt about it. So getting after it is important. But sometimes there are great tools that can help the process. And the Mark Pro is one of those great devices. Gary, I'd like to just tell everybody quickly about that if we could.
Thank you. I'd like to do that. I want to give one little thing from the beginning of this conversation just to hit everybody with a big point. The godfather of the ice age, the Harvard-trained medical doctor that invented the Rice Protocol, has not only publicly recanted, said, I made this up in my 1978 sports medicine book. Research has clearly shown I was wrong. Don't do it. It delays healing. And then he gives a direct reference to the fact that it causes additional damage. He has not only publicly recanted, but he wrote the foreword to the second edition of my book, Iced. So anybody who's saying, well, who's this guy? What's he say? Okay, stop. The guy who invented the Rice Protocol, after reading my book, publicly recanted, wrote the foreword to my second edition. Next question. Now, we get to Mark Pro. And you say, well, how does Mark Pro work? What Mark Pro does, it's a proprietary signal that they use to cause the muscle to contract. And then it doesn't fatigue the muscle, so it won't make it bigger, stronger, or prettier. That's not what it does. And there are electrical stimulation devices that can make you bigger, stronger, and prettier. That's not what Mark Pro does. Mark Pro facilitates the recovery process by activating the muscles and decongesting the area. That is the key point. If you think about recovery from any level, it doesn't matter what happened, how it happened, who it happened to, where it is, what caused it. None of that matters. All that matters is if you have tissue that is compromised, that is damaged. So say it's microtrauma from throwing a baseball. So you have the microtrauma in the area. Until you decongest the area, recovery is compromised. It's just that simple. So you say, well, how would you decongest it? Well, you decongest it by activating the muscles around the damaged site. And then as a result, the immune system will heal the tissue. So there's two things that are going on. You want tissue preservation and tissue regeneration. You want to preserve that which doesn't need to be lost, like we were just talking about the trifecta. You don't want to lose things you don't have to lose. So that's step one. And then step two is the regeneration. Well, if you are adequately, and I'm assuming that everyone listening here is adequately hydrated, nourished, and rested. If you have not managed those three things, manage those first because they are the most important. You've got to be hydrated, nourished, and rested. Now, assuming you show up and you're hydrated, nourished, and rested, what's the next thing that gets in the, what's the next obstacle? Well, it's congestion. Well, how do you get rid of congestion? Well, you activate the muscles. That's what Mark Pro does. Mark Pro doesn't do anything that's odd. It doesn't do anything you shouldn't do. In fact, the technology that's used in the Mark Pro, the parent, the sister company to Mark Pro, is a product called H-Wave. And H-Wave is a medical product that's in over 5,000 clinics across the country, and it's been used for more than 35 years. This is our 37th year, actually. So here we've got medical-grade technology in an over-the-counter product that can help you recover from things like triathletes, where their legs are just trash from doing the events that they do, or major league pitchers. At this point, I don't know whether we mentioned this. I don't think we did. That there are over 200 major league pitchers now using Mark Pro. Mm-hmm. And you say, wow, that's a lot of pitchers. No, there's only 390 guys. And I'm telling you, I have significantly more than 200. But last year I did a survey with all the trainers. So I sent an email to all the head trainers in Major League Baseball and said, hey, I'm trying to get a count. Can you help me here? How many guys are on Mark Pro? So that's an actual count from the trainers of all the major league teams, of which I got a 100% response. That in itself, I'm told, is a dramatic statistic. I had a 100% response from all the trainers and from all the teams, and there were over 200 major league pitchers last year using Mark Pro. This season, my guess, first time I'm saying this publicly, but my guess, I've added somewhere between 25 to 50 more. And how do I know that? Because I know how many machines I sold.
Right.
So I know what's happening, but I'm just saying now, we have over 200 major league pitchers using Mark Pro. And then you go in the NHL. I have virtually, at this point, I have two-thirds of all the teams in the NHL. So you say, well, wow, that's a pretty remarkable number. What do they use it for? When their muscles are tired and sore. In skating, there's a muscle called your hip flexor group up in the top of your leg area. And because pushing off of skates, that muscle gets chronically fatigued, kind of like a pitcher's arm does. Well, I'm great with doing that. In the NFL, very often the players are just tired and sore from all the work they do, all the training that they do, and they just want something to help decongest the area so the muscles can recover. So I'm used as a recovery tool in the NFL and Major League Baseball and hockey and soccer, in the NBA. It's just the way we do it. And people say, well, if everyone's doing it, how come I never heard of this before? Well, actually, everyone isn't doing it, but in the elite level, in the upper level collegiate market, basically, that's what's going on. And now it's working its way down to the average citizen like me. I'm just a regular guy. I'm a long distance runner. I ran a hard 20-mile run the other day through the hills on Sunday. Today's Monday, yesterday. I ran a hard 20-mile run. And actually, if we were on camera right now, you would see that I have it on my quads and my hamstrings just pumping out the waist so that I can recover. And it's like, really, you do it too? Well, yeah, it's gotten down to just regular people. So let's just say right now you are you're a high school athlete. And let's pick something simple like we're talking about. You're a high school pitcher. And you got a chance to go to college if you just do good in your senior year. You don't have to do great. Just do good. Everybody knows you'll be really good if you can make it, if you can last, if you not get hurt. Well, why in the world wouldn't you have a Mark Pro so that you could facilitate recovery in between your games? Why would you ever want to rely on luck or nothing goes wrong this year, I hope I don't get hurt? Why don't you use Mark Pro and facilitate the recovery process and protect yourself, prevent injuries, prevent problems? Because you know what happens? When you get tired and sore and you stay that way, you'll alter your mechanics. You alter your mechanics under the normal torque that you create when you play, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
So it becomes an injury prevention tool. Staying recovered, facilitating recovery, actually improves your performance because you're not tired and sore when you're performing. But it also, on the other end, it prevents injuries because now you're not tired and sore and you're not doing things you shouldn't do mechanically. So it just becomes this great process of saying, can we take a medical grade product that's used for bad stuff? You know, guys blow their knee out or shoulder up or whatever. And can we bring that technology over to just facilitate recovery from general sports fatigue? The answer is, of course, yes. It's simple. I jokingly say sometimes that it's like bringing a bazooka to kill a mosquito. I can do really hard stuff, but you tell me you're just tired and sore from throwing a baseball? It's simple.
Right. Gary Reinl, great, great stuff. If people want more information on you, they can go to GaryReinl.com. They can follow you on Twitter at The Anti-Iceman on Twitter as well. Gary, listen, such a great conversation today. I know we could go on for hours, but we are out of time. And I just want to let you know how much we appreciate all the work, insight, and research you've done. And it's led us to the book called Ice, The Illusionary Treatment Option. Your latest article is called Procrastination, a Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management. It all points in the direction of this new age of injury prevention, injury management, and recovery. Gary, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And one last thing I'd like to say, I didn't tell you anything or your audience today, anything that isn't common knowledge. I've simply made the effort to organize facts and present them. So I'm not making something up. I'm not a brain surgeon. I'm not a scientist. I'm a very organized reporter. And if you're an athletic trainer or a therapist or a doctor and you're hearing this and you're saying, well, I know everything he just said. I just told you. I didn't tell you anything new. I've simply organized the facts in a way to make it easy for you to understand.
Yeah.
And then to take that information and move forward.
Great stuff, Gary. So appreciated. And I will look forward to talking to you soon.
My pleasure. The meltdown continues.
All right, well, there you go. I think it's fairly conclusive. Ice is no longer the way to go when it comes to injury prevention, injury management, or injury recovery. Let us know what you think. Get to us, crushperformance.com is the website. And if you want to go back and listen again, the podcast is there. Also, pass it around to your friends, your teammates, your coaches, your athletic trainer, heck, your family doctor. A very, very important conversation when it comes to injuries and injury management in sport. I'd like to thank physiotherapist Daniel Bless for joining us earlier in the show and also Gary Reinl for sharing his great insights and research and helping us answer the question to ice or not to ice. Thanks for tuning in and we'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Fabulous Sports Big Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I was working at ESPN, of course, and of course I got to work every stinking day. You know, Lenny Winer was the guy that was on the phone. He picks up the phone. He goes, hi, this is George. He said, hang on. He puts him on hold and he comes back to him like, you know, 20 minutes or something. And it's George Steinbrenner. And Lenny's going, first of all, let me give you the real number to call. Don't call the regular number. And he gets on the phone and I start talking to him. And he said, I have some kind of ear thing, so I can't go up in the plane to get back. So I'm listening here and I start listening to you. And the next thing I know, he just felt like calling me. And it was the first time ever that he talked to me. And then he got to the point where I always called him because his birthday's 4th of July, you know, and I knew him through Susan a lot. I've known Susan for a very long time. And he was very good to me, but I liked him and I would call him and he would come on with us all the time. I mean, if he wasn't busy, he'd come on and talk to us. And I was very fortunate to have that relationship with him.
The Fabulous Sports Big can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.